All right, welcome everybody to Blake and Greg's ACC-SEC Weekly Wrap-Up Podcast. My name is Greg.
And my name is Blake.
And Blake, here we are, as sad as it may be, the end of the football season. And it's sad for me for a number of reasons, as I'm sure you can imagine. Hey, it ain't too happy for you either, but nevertheless.
Oh, yeah, I've known that for a long time.
Yeah, nevertheless, here we are, mid-January now. Now we've got a solid 8.5 months or so before football season kicks off again. What we thought we'd do, listeners, we tend to do this, not necessarily every year, but we try to at least. We're going to recap, give our thoughts on the national championship game, which happened just a couple nights ago. And then also, as sort of a special edition, we thought we'd do a best of the decade in terms of best player, best team, and best individual play. Does that sound like a good plan to you, Blake?
Yeah, I dig it.
Let's do it. Let's get into the national championship game. Of course, in New Orleans the other night. Final score, LSU 42, Clemson 25. Blake, initial thoughts, what'd you think?
Well, I didn't know what – it's hard to know what to expect. I thought it'd be a really close game because I thought, like we had mentioned before, I thought like you did, there was a clear-cut top three. There's a drop-off. Now, if Bama had a healthy Tua, you may could say that, well, they're a pretty solid four, but he wasn't healthy, so they were not in the mix either. So he had to put somebody in there, and it was Oklahoma that got the nod, and they just weren't on the same level. They were on that next level with Oklahoma and Florida and
Even Oregon.
Oregon's in that mix. There's a lot of teams in that mix, but they weren't in that top mix. And Clemson, Ohio State was all we thought it would be. It was a great game, and a few plays here and there decided it. Of course, LSU mauled Oklahoma in the first round of the playoffs. And then this game I thought would be kind of similar to Clemson, Ohio State. And, you know, what we just saw, frankly, LSU was a buzzsaw this year. And there's just no way. I mean, there's no other way to put it. I mean, they were that good, that consistent. Beat the AP top four preseason teams, all of them. Once it had seven top 10 wins. And, I mean, what can you say that they were just, I mean, Joe Burrow had a season for the ages. He has weapons. In the much maligned defense played better as the year went on.
It did. They got healthier. They got healthier as the year went on.
Got healthier and got better and played better towards the end of the season. And Clemson, you know, had a great year, but, like Ohio State, you know, very good team, but just, I mean, LSU was too good, Greg. And if you're Clemson, if you're a Clemson fan like you are, look, you had a great year. You thought you'd be in the playoffs. You were. You had a big playoff win against Ohio State. And I know it's disappointing, but at the same time, you were ready. I thought Venables had a great game plan.
Oh yeah, great. I agree.
I think this is his best coaching job of his career at Clemson was this year. I don't think the talent was there like it has been, especially on the front. That was where you saw, three man fronts, and then having y'all played a 3-1-7 against LSU.
Yeah,
you don't see that very often, but that's what he thought he had to do. But once Burrow and company figured it out, they started moving the ball pretty much at will. So I don't know what else you can do, frankly.
Well,
I don't know.
So to your point, and it's funny because I felt like Venables did in a lot of ways what we said he should do. And I'm not, of course, trying to put myself anywhere near his level of expertise, but what he did early on was he really clamped down on those intermediate throws. And Burrow was confused. You could tell he was confused. Yeah. You could tell he was frustrated early on. Like, why is this not working? Why are these guys not open? You know, why? And also getting a little pressure here and there. By the way, he is as slippery as they come, man. I don't know. He's got a very, you know, we talk about like the Cam Newtons and even on the other end, Connor Shaw, sort of guys who have the ability to sort of sense pressure and somehow find a way almost instinctively to avoid it. Burrow is one of those guys. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how he avoided some of those sacks, to be honest. I mean, I was watching with some Clemson people, and we were all talking about how many times we were just inches away from getting him, and then it would turn into a big play. It wasn't like, And it wasn't like just once or twice. It's like a bunch of times we're just so close to getting him, but he slips away. But anyway, the problem with us was on the other side of the ball, we couldn't really do much either, early on at least.
Yeah.
We sort of figured it out and then kind of got away from it, and I'll talk more about that in a minute. But if we had put points on the board and really sort of turned the screw on LSU's offense and sort of forced them to produce or else, maybe it would have been different. But we didn't really do much either, and then before you know it, like you said, they figured it out, and then it was off to the races for LSU.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of the Chiefs-Texans playoff game.
Oh, gosh.
A little bit, where Clemson jumped, and we guys had a 17-7 lead in the second quarter, and you kept thinking, if you're an LSU fan, you're like, okay, now we got to do something now. But also, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, if they figure this thing out, you might see a run, and they did, they got on a run. And like you say, maybe if Clemson would have put a little more pressure on them early and got a bigger lead, maybe makes them, more one dimensional. I don't know, but, you guys brought pressure. And I think sometimes you brought too much. And I understand I want to give Burrow time to throw.
I didn't mean pressure in the literal sense. I just meant putting more points on the board, kind of psychological pressure.
Yeah, exactly. But also on defense, I thought you guys sometimes blitz a little bit too much, because when you do blitz, you don't get to them. You're leaving those guys one on one with
and
one high
find
safety.
Them. Yeah,
and that's tough against LSU. You can do that against a lot of teams, but them is tough. If you play two deep safeties, yeah, you take away those deep balls. But at the same time, you're also taking away a guy in the box. It's kind of pick your poison. But I thought the game plan was really good. I thought it was really good, because you have to try to confuse them. And if Brent Venables can't figure it out, then I don't think it can be figured out, frankly, Greg. I just don't think. I mean, because he tried, and I thought his game plan was great. And I mean, they had 628 yards.
So what do you
do? I just don't know how you stop them.
Well, you keep the ball out of their hands.
Right about Lawrence. I mean, your offense didn't have their best game. I think they were surprised. I think they were a little bit surprised with LSU's defensive speed. But also, I think that I thought you abandoned the run a little bit early. I thought you threw too much.
I was gonna talk about that. Okay. First of all, I just want to get out there and say LSU is a better team. They're a better team. I think if we play them 10 times, I think we might win 3, to be honest. And I don't think that's unreasonable. I think we can beat LSU, but they are a better team. They beat us 7, maybe 8 times out of 10. I don't know if you agree or disagree.
I think 8 out of 10 is about right.
Okay. So, but I put, other than LSU, I'll say that. Okay. I put the blame on this loss, and I don't mean that, because I'm not trying to take away credit from LSU. I'll say this. I put the blame for this not being more competitive on 2 sets of shoulders. And it's not, and granted, take this with a grain of salt, but 1, Trevor Lawrence. And it's hard for me to say that, because he had a bad game. And quite frankly, it's the only bad game he's ever had that I've seen. Mm-hmm. So I can't give him too much crap. And it really wasn't that bad of a game. But he had, I believe that somebody counted, he had 13 overthrows. And that's just unlike him. And you're talking about guys that are many times were open, and he just overthrew them. And not barely, but by a few feet, and this was on a lot of times on third downs where the drives could have been extended. You keep the ball out of LSU's hands for a little while. And second and most important, Blake, I put the blame on Tony Elliott. Not necessarily on Brad Scott. I kind of get the feeling he was checked out anyway. Maybe on him too, but you can group them together. But I thought our play calling was more or less atrocious throughout.
I thought it was good early on.
I hated it. Well, maybe early on it was better, but even the first play out of scrimmage, Blake, we ran like some sort of hook and ladder. Why are we getting cute? We don't have to get cute, But and to your point, I absolutely agree. We abandoned the run for no good reason, Blake. We would run the ball on first down, get 7 yards, and then throw 2 incompletions and like long incompletions, like 30-yard passes. Why are we going for a home run ball every time? I don't understand that. Why aren't we trying to extend drives? I looked at LSU's defense in the second quarter, and I said, they're confused, they're gassed. We were moving the ball in the second quarter. They're actually starting to get tired. If we can keep our foot on the pedal and put points on the board, extend drives. Even if we don't put points on the board, just extend drives. No three and outs. Get a few first downs at least. You know, we have a chance to wear them out, and that'll pay dividends later. And for some reason, we abandon the run. Blake, look, Travis Etienne had a handful of carries. He had 15 carries. Trevor Lawrence had 10, which some of those you can count. You know, he got sacked a few times.
Yeah.
T. Higgins had that one carry. That's his only carry of his career.
Mm-hmm.
Lynn J. Dixon had one carry. I loved using Lynn J. Dixon because anytime he's in and Etienne's not, you automatically assume that's going to be a throw, right? But he's a capable ball carrier too. Etienne's averaging over 5 yards a carry. Why are we not giving him the ball more? Why are we not giving Lynn J. Dixon the ball more? Why are we going for these 30-yard passes when we're up for part of that time? And even if we're down a possession, maybe two possessions.
Mm-hmm.
It reminded me a lot of the Chad Morris days where we'd get behind and then we'd panic. Instead of putting together good drives, we'd panic and try to go for home run balls. I don't understand why we did that.
Well, I'll say this. I think what Elliott was trying to do in some ways was look at matchups. And I think he saw one high safety. And he's thinking, well, I got Higgins on the outside, and the one high safety's down. He's playing the field, and Higgins is on the boundary, and he's got man up, and he's 6'4", athletic with good hands. I get it because that's what LSU did a lot of. They had their guys outside, and if they had man up coverage, they sent him down the field and try to give him the ball. And I get his mindset. But I do think that maybe the running game was abandoned too early. I say abandoned too early. I thought ETN was underutilized because I think he's definitely your most explosive player. There's no doubt about that. And he runs a lot bigger than his size. He's not a big guy, but he runs. He's a good north south runner for a guy who's 5'10", 205, or whatever he is. And he was getting on first down. You see him get 4, 5, 6, 7 yards, and then you'd have second and five or so, and then you come out and throw one down the field, it's incomplete, and all of a sudden it's third and five. And I think the pressure got to Lawrence a little bit on the third and fives because against them, I think you think as LSU, we got to score points, got to score points, got to score points to keep up with them. And I think that mindset does kind of maybe. I'm not going to say – maybe it kind of lends itself for you going against – going away from the run. But also I think with Lawrence, with his high throws, he had some high throws. He definitely did. I think a lot of that – I think he felt some phantom pressure sometimes.
Yeah, I think he did,
I think he felt like they were coming. And if you're a quarterback and you think they're coming, whether they are or not, and you think – especially with Chase on, number 18, I think he was a guy who was consistently beating your tackles, he'll get around the edge. I thought, of course, one time he got a face mask. I was going to poke his eye out. That face mask, he got him. His fingers went in his face mask. But I think he's thinking, you have that clock in your head. And I think he's like, okay, I got to get rid of this ball. And then he throws it downfield and it's high. But Lawrence still, he has accuracy issues too. He's not the most accurate passer down the field. He just isn't. He does a really good deep ball, has a good touch, but he's got to work on that accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
He's not Joe Burrow in that regard. He just isn't. He's got a lot of talent, but he's only a sophomore. That's something that he'll work on, and I would expect improvement next year on that. But LSU's just a different animal because I think you do think, God, it's going to take 40 points to win this game. So we got to. Our way to get 40 is slinging it, not running it. But I think it. If you're Clemson, your game plan all year has been a pretty balanced attack, and you should stay balanced.
Right.
But that's just my take on that.
I agree. And to sort of add on, we say Trevor Lawrence had a bad game. It's kind of funny. Well, it's kind of funny how we use that relative term because he was 18 for 37, 234 yards, no touchdowns, no picks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a bad game.
That's not that bad.
No, it's not. It's not that bad. But for him, it kind of is. Especially this is his worst game, probably. Now he's had games with more turnovers, but I haven't seen him miss that many wide open shots ever. And maybe just some of the decision making. Sometimes he didn't try to force anything. But some of that's play calling too, which we already touched on. But yeah, Blake, what can you say? LSU was a better team. You might say team of destiny. I was nervous. I was nervous all week, rightfully so. But even when you see the teams come out, they had an energy that was different than ours. Ours was almost passe, you know, like, I don't, maybe even a little fearful. I'm not sure. But if you watch them come out, they were ready, and we were just kind of like, okay, I guess we're here, you know. It's just, what can you say? This is.
Well, I did notice, Greg, when y'all were up and Venables was stopping them and Burrow's looking confused. I never saw on the sidelines him get upset. He just kind of sat there and he looked pretty cool. Like, you know, we'll figure this out.
Yeah.
And they did.
Yeah, they did.
And, you know, look, when you have wide receivers like Marshall, Chase, and Jefferson, it's hard to cover all three. And also Clyde Edwards-Helaire, by the way, is also pretty darn good. And Randy Moss's kid's good.
Yeah, he is.
So, I mean, you got those weapons. And, you know, if you're Clemson, you got all, I mean, you're trying to confuse him, but at the same time, Burrow's going to try to find the mismatch. And if he sees Chase out there, I don't care who's covering him. And he's got man covered with no safety help. He's gonna try to give him the ball. I mean, heck, Chase even dropped a touchdown pass. You don't see that very often. But I mean, look, it was just there. It's one of the best teams you ever see. It was their year, and I think the same thing happens to Ohio State too. Ohio State's a really good team, but I don't think they would have. It's really those guys, Greg, were just kind of in a league of their own this year.
And it's sort of crazy how much perfect storm this team was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Burrow was average at best the rest of his career. This year he's unbelievable.
Yeah.
You get this, the young Joe Brady as the quarterback's coach. Edwards-Helaire kind of, you know, hit his stride this year. As well as Chase and Jefferson and like you mentioned, Thaddeus Moss. We knew who he was because he was Randy Moss's kid, but he didn't really do much. You had all this sort of come together, and what's crazy is how it's dismantled too, just over the last couple of days. Now, you knew Burrow was gone, and you kind of – I know some people were surprised that Joe Brady left. You kind of figured, I mean, heck, as a
– Yeah, I think it was a stupid move by him, but
probably.
I get it.
Well,
I don't get – the allure of going to coach in the NFL. I don't understand it. I know some guys are NFL guys, but Joe Brady could have made a lot of money for a long time in college. And he can always go back. He's going to a team that has major issues.
Yes.
And he's got a hell of a job ahead of him. And I wonder, probably making less money.
I bet he's making more than he was, but he's making less than he could.
That raise, man.
Yes.
I mean, there's no doubt about that. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised.
They moved him to Co.
Retired.
Yeah,
he'd been the whole. I mean, he'd been the OC and also quarterbacks coach. He's taken that over and made about $2.5 million a year. It just wouldn't surprise me.
Right. I guarantee he's not making $2.5 million with the Panthers. Guaranteed.
No, But he's a pro guy.
I guess.
I mean, some guys are pro, and usually that stuff, you know, is funny. His offense, because what they did is not your typical spread, but it was a more of a New Orleans Saints type spread with some college concepts and tempo. Pretty unique, and plus you throw in great receivers too. And those receivers, here's the thing about LSU. Those receivers have been there. It's just they weren't showcased. Because they always recruit well.
Yeah, of course.
Then you bring a guy in, and all of a sudden now, I mean, Jamar Chase and Marshall and all those guys were big-time recruits, but you get in there and finally have an offense that caters to you, and you put up these massive video game numbers, which is what they did. Yeah, it was just I wonder where they're going to go now with Joe Brady being gone. I don't know where you go.
And I don't even know who Joe Burrow's backup is. I don't know who the next guy is.
Miles Brennan.
Don't know anything about him.
I mean,
tough act to follow.
A couple years ago, but hasn't done anything. And
yeah.
I mean, they're going to take a hit because they're in a really tough division, and they have Chase back and Marshall back, but they lose Jefferson.
They lose Edwards-Helaire, right? Isn't he going out?
I think so too. So you lose those two guys. That's two big losses. Now they'll still be a good team, but they're not going to be near what they were this year.
It's also interesting. We've talked about this. How, as crazy as it seems, the West is probably only going to get better from here on out. By and large, Auburn is going to benefit from Chad Morris at OC. Bama is going to be Bama. You got Arkansas, who's going to benefit from the program they're building. They're putting together a lot of good people there. You got Ole Miss and Mississippi State with new coaches that are breathing new blood.
I mean, Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach.
Yeah, come on. A&M's down there, you know, just kind of biding their time.
I think, could compete for the West next year because of – now, I like Auburn. I'm hiring Morris and Bama. But all these guys, of course, also LSU too. But they're all replacing – I mean, Bama's going to lose Tua, Ruggs, and Judy, right? And also Najee Harris.
Yeah, that's true.
And then Auburn loses all that talent on defense. They're gone. So they got to rebuild that defense. And you got LSU loses Burrow and all the – so they're not – I mean, they're more reloading than rebuilding. But they'll probably take a step back. And then so you have a spot there that could be filled. A&M's got Mon back for senior season. A lot of guys back. Next year is their year to make that jump. If they make a jump, it's next year. But then, of course, the future with Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss and Mike Leach at Mississippi State and Pittman with the two good hires at Arkansas, yeah, the West looks like really healthy. The East is a lot more iffy, really iffy. I mean, you got Florida, who looks like, to me, the favorite next year. I actually think they're the favorite next year.
I think Georgia takes
a step
back.
Without Jake Fromm, I mean, and also DeAndre Swift's gone, too. Then Tennessee, trended up, but can Tennessee
– can they continue?
That momentum, can they continue that momentum? Also, their schedule is always really front-loaded, so can they get through that? A lot of questions next year, but LSU this year, definitely. I mean, that's just one for the ages, Greg. You don't see many teams that are that good and that consistently explosive, and just they bring it every week. It's hard to do with, but you have to credit their leadership too, with Burrow and those guys who are seniors. Because that's and also too, their offensive line's pretty good, by the way.
Oh yeah, it was,
talks
really good.
The offensive line's actually pretty good. So you got to factor in that too. Is part of their success.
By the way, Aranda's going to Baylor too. I heard that today.
To be head coach?
Yep.
That's not that big a deal. I'm not that big on Aranda.
I haven't been either.
I'm not that big on him. He's okay.
What was crazy was Fuente's name was floated around for that Baylor job, which Virginia Tech fans are not happy with him because apparently, he went down and interviewed. So that's not a good look. Probably that's a lateral move, right?
Look, he has 1 foot out the door. Well, first off, Fuente is a Oklahoma guy. He might want to get back to that part of the country, being in Virginia. But two, he finished 76th in recruiting. I think he has 1 foot out the door. I think he's waiting for a chance to leave. I really believe that. Yeah. I don't think he wants to stay there.
Well, is there anything else you wanted to say about the game?
Congrats to LSU Bill.
Yep, congrats, Bill.
I'm sure he is on cloud nine. This is one of those years that you dream of as a fan. I've never myself experienced it, but at the same time, I can appreciate just that kind of dominant success. And this year was their year.
Yep.
Period.
It was fantastic win, fantastic team, Bill. I know you're enjoying it, and other LSU fans are as well. Perfect storm came together, and man, it's magic when it happens. Congrats. Better team certainly won. Speaking of better teams, Blake, let's talk our best of the decade. You want to start with best team?
My best team?
Might be a good segue. Yeah, what's your team of the decade? Now, listeners, we're not focused on just ACC or SEC, although I think all my answers are in the ACC or SEC. But we were thinking nationwide, but nevertheless, Blake, who is your best team of the teens, so to speak?
I got a tie.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that is 2019 LSU.
Ah, very timely.
And 2013 Florida State.
Ah, interesting. Interesting. All right, make your case reach.
That Florida State team was really dominant. I don't know if they had a close game until the championship game that year. I don't know if they had a close game. But they were really dominant. Jameis Winston winning the Heisman. And all those pieces they had on defense, LaMarcus Joyner and the guys up front, and then, of course, they had, receiver, they had Rashad Green, and they had, of course, Winston at quarterback, and I think it was pre Dalvin Cook, but they had weapons.
He might have been a freshman, but that was right around the time. I don't know. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, I think it was for some reason. I think it was pre Dalvin Cook. I could be wrong about that, but And they had that tight end. Was it Jack Nicholson's grandson, O'Leary?
Oh God, he abused us. Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah, he did. He was a good player too. He played in the NFL for a few years, but that team was really good. I don't think it's talked about enough, frankly. They're really good. But I have to put LSU in the mix because of their resume. Their resume is bad. I've never seen a better resume for a team. I mean, to beat seven top 10 teams and to beat the AP top four. And they only had really two close games all year. Two really close games. And that was the Auburn game was pretty close. I think they won 23-20.
23-20 Auburn game. And Texas was a 7-point game. And Bama was a 5-point game. Yep.
And now who's a 7-point game?
Texas.
Texas. Yeah, that's right. That was another close one.
Now, and see, that's also Texas is a number 9 team, which they, of course, were not a top 10 team legitimately, but they were at the time. But yeah,
I still went down there to Austin to do it. And Texas, you know, in the season, pretty strong. Beat Utah's butt in the Alamo Bowl. But yeah, but I mean, seven top 10 teams at the time, but they beat, I mean, all those teams are pretty solid.
It's also rare when you think about it to even play seven top 10 teams in one season, yeah. You know, but to beat them all. Yeah. It's absolutely incredible.
But, those two for me, take the cake. If you want the honorable mention out there, I could say the 2016 Clemson team is honorable mention too, because they had a really good year that year. They lost to Pittsburgh that year. But I like that team better than actually last year's team for some reason. I don't know why.
Interesting.
With Watson and the tight end, Jordan Leggett.
Yeah, Leggett.
And Mike Williams in that crowd, and also the running back was Wayne Gallman. I liked Wayne Gallman, and you know, good defense with guys like was that back in the days of I guess that was Christian Wilkins and probably a lot of guys you had last year.
Yeah, most of the guys we had last year. Yeah, that was their first year.
And, you know, I mean, so I mean, so yeah, so I actually like that team a lot as far as their talent goes. Heck of a year. Of course, Bama's, you know, 2012 when they smacked Notre Dame in the national championship game was like 56-16. That was a great team. The Auburn 2010 team.
Great team. Yeah, you know, and actually
– the table with Cam Newton. Yeah, so.
And they're going to come up again in this conversation, I think. I'm going to tip the scales, Blake, towards the 2013 Florida State team.
Okay.
Because I agree with you. For some reason, that team doesn't get talked about. It might be because – Florida State sort of sucked before then, and they suck now, so it's kind of tough to remember them. But this team was unbelievable. You said you weren't sure if they had a close game other than the national championship. Blake, I'll go ahead and tell you they didn't. I got it right here. They beat Pitt 41-13, Nevada 62-7. Well, heck, I don't have to go through all these. I'll tell you the ranked teams that they beat. Maryland was ranked at the time. They beat them 63-0. Then they went to Death Valley and play Clemson, who was number 3 at the time. And by the way, this wasn't a flash in the pan. Clemson went on to beat Ohio State in the Orange Bowl this year. They beat Clemson in Death Valley 51-14, which is probably the worst defeat in Death Valley ever, if I had to imagine. If I had to guess, I'd say that's probably up there with the worst.
Got to be up there, yeah.
They beat number 7 Miami 41-14. Then they beat number 20 Duke. This is back when Duke was ranked. And they were a good team. Baby Duke 45-7, and then, of course, won the national championship 34-31 against a number 2, really good, obviously, Auburn team.
Yep.
To me, I think part of the reason I selected them as my number 1 team of the decade is because they tend to be forgotten. I don't know why that is. It might be also be because it's Jameis Winston years, and based on Jameis Winston in the NFL, it's sort of easy to forget his success and how dominant he was in college. You know, guys like Cam Newton, it's easy to remember their college years because they're still in the NFL and they're still playing at a pretty high level. Some of those guys who kind of petered out in the pros, you sort of forget how good they were in college.
Yeah.
Like, go back and look at Tim Tebow's stats in college, for instance.
They're
crazy good. I mean, they're Joe Burrow level good, or pretty darn close at least. But you kind of forget that because of what they did and what they ended up doing in the pros. So, yeah, I got the 2013 Florida State team as my team of the decade, but certainly honorable mention of the teams you mentioned too. And you got to put LSU, 2019 LSU in the mix.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they got to be up there too. Yeah.
All right, Blake. Well, how about your player of the decade? Is it Joe Burrow?
As awesome as he was, I'm going Cam Newton 2010.
Ah, interesting.
The only reason I am is because I think that Cam Newton had less weapons around him.
That's fair.
Joe had Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, and Terrace Marshall, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Now, I'm not saying Cam didn't have good players, but try to think about who Cam had at receiver and running back in 2010.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know the running back was Michael Dyer. I remember Dyer,
yeah.
He was a five-star back out of high school, played really well, and then did something, got kicked off the team, transferred somewhere else, and kind of flamed out. I think he may have ended up at Louisville at the end of his career, but he just kind of flamed out. And then you had a receiver. I don't remember the receivers. I can't tell you who they were. I think one of them was Jeff Blake's kid. Remember Jeff Blake?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think he had a kid that played receiver for me. He was, he was just kind of a possession guy. And on defense, I can't think of, except for Nick Fairley, on defense, what names come to mind for their defense that
Fairley
year?
Fairley was the only one that came to my mind, too.
Yeah, and that team went undefeated on the national championship.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to go ahead and tell you. Cam was on my radar, and actually that Auburn team was on my radar for best of the decade. But if you remember, all right, so first of all, I didn't select Cam as my player of the decade because it's kind of like some people, I know people were talking about Joe Burrow, they were comparing and they said these guys would be in the conversation for player of the decade if they did it for more than one season. And Cam obviously did it one season and he was out for a number of different reasons, some legitimate, some not, and we know what that means. But also that Auburn team, they didn't dominate like the Florida State team.
No, they lost close games.
And including to your Chickens and to my Tigers, too. In fact,
yes.
Like, I believe both of us were up, something like 21-7, 24-10, something like that at half, something like that in those two games.
Yeah, we were up in the fourth quarter by two scores. But here's the thing.
Not the second time.
The first time, yes. Second time, no. It was not competitive.
Well, it's crazy.
But yeah, in fact, you guys,
we were up, and we were
still going overtime, right?
Yeah, and we were laying it on them. And in fact, yeah, because our quarterback wasn't Colin Harper at that point. I don't think
it was Kyle Parker.
Kyle Parker. He got hurt that game. He cracked his rib that game, and we just couldn't. I don't remember who the backup was. But we just couldn't get it done. Probably Cole Stout. He was probably still around back then. But we just couldn't get it done. And then it's crazy to think that we actually had that team on the ropes that year, and they ended up winning the national championship. Sort of crazy. Y'all that's one of those one of those teams that got a lot better as the season went along.
Yes, and they did. I mean, I remember them playing Bama.
They figured it out, man.
In Bama, in Tuscaloosa, Bama jumped on them early, and Bama had, back in those days, that may have been the most talented Bama team they ever had. They had Julio Jones and Trent Richardson and Mark Ingram and on defense like Marcel Darius and Dre Kirkpatrick and Dante Hightower and Courtney Upshaw. They were loaded that year. And they actually lost three games that year. Unbelievably, a team that loaded lost three games. But they lost to Auburn, South Carolina, and LSU, I think, that year. But they jumped on Auburn pretty early, and Auburn came back. That was a team of destiny because I think Bam was going in for like a 24-0 lead, and Ingram fumbled the ball actually out of the back of the end zone, and he's going in for a touchdown. And that totally changed momentum, and of course Auburn came back and won. But just Cam Newton was so dominant. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was so dominant that year. That's why I had to take Cam. I know it was 1 year, but his dominance for 1 year was of the likes. Now running and passing, a lot of running involved. But just without the supporting cast that Burrow had, and I think Joe Burrow, I know he did for 1 year, but that 1 year was special, obviously, one of the best ever. That I had to give the nod to Cam. And who'd you pick?
I'll have you guess. First of all, Blake, I ain't going to fight you for picking Cam because he was on my radar, too. I think anybody would probably have to consider him and Joe Burrow, to be honest. I didn't pick Cam or Joe Burrow. Who do you think
your
I picked?
Your criteria is for more than 1 year. You want more than 1 year.
Well, it just sort of ended up that way because
I'm going to pick Deshaun Watson.
No, but come on. I'm not that much of a homer. But he's up there. He's got to be in the conversation. No.
Let me think.
I'll give you a hint. SEC.
Okay, in the 2010s. Well, you know what? I'm gonna throw a name out there that I didn't even that also doesn't get enough love. Johnny Manziel.
That's exactly who I picked.
Okay.
Johnny Manziel is my player of the decade for a few reasons. For one, I know he. I mean, it's only two seasons to Cam Newton's one or Joe Burrow's one, and Deshaun Watson's 2.5/3, really. But Johnny Manziel, Blake, came in at the perfect time. I think A&M had just joined the SEC that year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, you're exactly right.
And he came out of nowhere. Much like Cam Newton, I can't even name many other people on that team. No superstars on A&M's team at that point that I can remember. I remember he had a good tight end.
Mike Evans.
Yeah, he had Mike Evans. You're right. I always think that he played tight end just because he's so big, but he was a receiver. But he came in, Blake, and every time he was on, it was must-watch TV. And you look at his stats, dude. First of all, Blake, 68% completion percentage in his first year, 70% his second. He threw for 7,800 yards total, 63 touchdowns, 22 picks. And by the way, ran for 30 touchdowns. Dude, in 2 years, was responsible for 93 touchdowns.
Yeah, and in fact, he set the Cotton Bowl record for rushing, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
It's Oklahoma.
Yes, and as you know, my heart goes out to Deshaun Watson, obviously. A lot of respect for Cam Newton as far as what he did in college. And Joe Burrow as well. Jameis Winston is another one of those that doesn't get enough credit. We talked about that.
His Heisman year was incredible.
Unbelievable how good he was, his Heisman year. That guy, I've never seen anybody less rattled. I mean, I'm even considering Joe Burrow in this. I've never seen anybody less rattled in the pocket than Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston would stand tall like a statue in the pocket, keep his eyes down the field. Guys bearing down on him never seemed to faze him. Now, it does now in the NFL. I don't know if you saw this. What did he throw, 30 touchdowns, 30 picks this year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he didn't do that in college. Manziel, we know what happened to him after his college years. But while he was in college, man, he was something else. He was, like I said, must-see TV.
I could say this. I think Johnny Manziel, is the most responsible for changing the way SEC teams play offense.
Hmm.
Think about it.
Yeah.
When Johnny Manziel came to the SEC was more of a ground game defensive league.
True.
And here comes this kid, redshirt freshman, who Texas wanted him to play safety or something, or corner or safety, something like that. Oregon, Indiana, I think he originally committed to Oregon. He was straight out of Kerrville Tyvee High School.
That's right.
In Kerrville, Texas. And he's a three-star kid. Goes to A&M, was a three-star. Wins the job. And also, don't forget, his first year, his coordinator was Cliff Kingsbury. So Cliff Kingsbury also deserves credit, because Kingsbury, I think, is a master with quarterbacks and running offense. Now, he has a problem with defense, obviously, always has. But but with that, I mean, he was a perfect coordinator for that job. And because I think someone came from Houston down, and I think Kingsbury was actually his OC at Houston, so he just moved on to A&M. But he set the world on fire, and the Bama game was when you're like, whoa,
yeah,
because Bama was Bama, and he went to Tuscaloosa and they beat him in Tuscaloosa in 2012, and that was the year Bama won the national championship in 2012,
right?
But their only loss was at home to A&M, Johnny Manziel. Because they couldn't stop him. Johnny Manziel, yeah, he's definitely – I have no issue with that, because what he did was incredible. For 2 years.
I actually miss watching him, because I would look and, I would never probably on a football Saturday, I probably wouldn't watch, for instance, A&M Mississippi State. I mean, I'd have it on whatever while I'm watching something else. But when Manziel was there, I watched every game – I watched every game that was on when he was there, just because every game was worth watching. And what he did in that bowl game, was it the Peach Bowl against Duke? When Duke went up.
Duke went up big.
Yeah, Duke went up, I don't know, two or three scores at least, and he put on a performance for the ages, and that was his last college.
That was the same Duke team that Florida State beat 45-7.
Yeah.
It was.
Had A&M on the ropes to show you how good that Florida State team was.
Yeah.
All right.
But Johnny Manziel, too, I think he's a definition of a true dual-threat quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you see guys labeled dual-threat, but they're not really a dual-threat. They're more runners. And, because they're labeled that, I mean, the recruiting your services rate him as dual threat or pro style. Lawrence is a pro style guy. I mean, Lawrence is a dual threat guy. Burrow's a dual threat guy. But they're labeled pro style. And the dual threat guys are guys like let me try to think of somebody out that, you know, how many people would know. Justin Fields is a dual threat. Now he is a true dual threat guy. But a lot of these dual threat guys they're more runners than passers. Johnny Manziel is both. It's hard to find a true dual threat, a true pass first dual threat guy. Johnny Manziel is one of them. I mean, Russell Wilson's one of them. Those kind of guys. Those are hard guys to find. And Johnny Manziel had one heck of a career.
He did, in just 2 years. So, all right. Well, let's move on. And by the way, I'm just looking at Johnny Manziel's stats, and I came across this quote from Barry Switzer. Barry Switzer apparently did not like Johnny Manziel. There's this quote that says, "I don't like his antics. I think he's an arrogant little prick. I've said that, and I'll say it again."
Plus, well, I've worked with him. I mean, he was an arrogant little prick, but he was that doesn't take away his skills.
And it ain't like Switzer's the most humble guy in the world either. No, exactly. So that's for Switzer.
And let's be honest, Cam Newton was an arrogant prick.
Yes, yes.
You know, I mean, a lot of guys are. I mean.
Joe Burrow's an arrogant prick. Let's be honest. He is. He is. That's all right. He backs it up. It's all right.
He is. I mean, he's cocky. I mean, that's – but if you can back it up, man.
You can back it up. Yeah, that's what it's all about.
You know? But, I mean, Switzer's an arrogant prick.
Yes, he is.
So, you know.
All right, Blake, let's talk play of the decade. There were only a few that came to my mind. I'm curious as to what you picked and also what was what gets honorable mentions in your mind, at least. What was your overall play of the decade? What was the best play you saw in the last 10 years of college
football? Well, I'm going to go back to 2013 again.
All right.
And Auburn versus Georgia.
Ah.
And Nick Marshall throws the deep ball with nobody open, and it just kind of two guys running into each other, and the ball gets batted in the air, and Davis, I think the kid's name was Davis for Auburn, just picks it up out of the air and runs in the end zone for an improbable win for Auburn. I think it was
43-38.
They won like 43-38 or something, whatever it was.
43-38, yeah, that's right.
But, that play right there, man, because of how unlikely, and Auburn had a heck of a play later on that season, by the way, but that play right there, you talk about impossible. I mean, if you want to see this play, log on to YouTube and just look for that play. I mean, Auburn, Georgia. I don't think they call it Hail Mary, but it may be called Hail Mary. But the Auburn announcer that died in the car wreck was the one who did made the call, and it was a really good call. But yeah, I mean, Auburn was part of that. At 2013, Auburn was really living good because that was the first phase on that year as far as great plays go. And that was just to me, that I don't know why that sticks out to me more than any other play, but that play just sticks out to me. Like an improbable, impossible play that kept Auburn's national championship hopes alive, by the way. Because if they lose that game, they're out. And they found a way to win. And, of course, they did it again, a similar play. And then, bam, play Florida State and won in a underrated classic, by the way. Nobody talks about that game.
Yes.
But Florida State, I think, beat with like 10 seconds to go. Kelvin Benjamin with touchdown pass with like 10 seconds to go to beat Auburn. And nobody talks about that game. You know?
Yeah,
you don't really
right.
hear about that game.
Yeah.
It's a great game. Great game. What about you?
I'm going the next week. 2013.
Iron Bowl?
I'm going Iron Bowl. I'm going kick six.
Yeah, I'm okay with that, too. That was my second choice.
You know, Blake, there are a handful of plays that stick out in my mind as the best ever in college football, in no particular order, and this is not a complete list, but you think, the Flutie Hail Mary is one of the best. You know, the band's out on the field, a little overrated, but still one of my favorites, just for historical purposes.
I'm going to say the Cordell Stewart Hail Mary against Michigan.
That's a good one, too. Also, Bill will like this. The Bluegrass Miracle is an underrated single play. Deshaun Watson, Hunter Renfrow in the end zone, yeah, great play. not in the same league, of course. But the kick six, to me, is part of that conversation. The kick six For one, it's the Iron Bowl. You know, can you get any more high stakes in the regular season than the Iron Bowl, really? That's probably the most heated rivalry in all of college sports. We talk, you know, you and I are Clemson and South Carolina fans. That's a pretty heated game. I don't know that it's quite Iron Bowl level. And Iron Bowl is particularly a year like this where Alabama's coming in. I think they were 9-win and Auburn was 10, or maybe vice versa.
Well, no. I mean, no, the winner of that game was still alive in the playoff picture.
Correct.
That was how that worked out.
Correct.
So if Bama wins that game, they're playing Georgia. No, Missouri, because Missouri won the East that year.
Missouri won the East, yes.
And, yeah, so they're playing, which I'm still mad about, you know, Johnny Manziel is a South Carolina fan. If Manziel and A&M would have beaten Missouri that last game, then we go to the championship game, not Missouri.
Yeah.
So Johnny Manziel let me down. But anyway, yeah, so they're playing that game. Is basically like a de facto playoff game.
Yeah, before the playoffs actually were instituted, This was, and was this the last year before the playoffs came in? I think this was.
Yes, 2014 was the first year of the playoffs. So,
right,
yeah,
so this was almost, you could almost consider this the first, you know, one of the first playoff games, so to speak. But not only that, Blake, but think about, okay, so this is the Iron Bowl, and also this is just a few months after the whole poisoning of the trees thing. This is that same year. And there's just a lot of context around how big this game was for both teams. And to have an improbable play like this, it's not very often, Blake, that a play swings 100% chance of victory for one team into 100% chance of victory for the other team. You know,
yeah.
The Bluegrass Miracle did that. The band out on the field did that. Flutie's Hail Mary did that. Yeah. Those are the ones, and even the Hail Mary you're talking about the previous week, that did that too. And this did that as well. But maybe probably less probable than any of the other ones that we've talked about. And to me, I have to wonder, Blake, if you try this, how many times do you have to try this for it to work? If you did this exact same setup 1,000 times, does it work once? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I will say this. It was a long field goal.
Yes.
And I didn't really understand.
It didn't make much sense.
Yeah, because I think it was 56 yards.
Yeah, I didn't need it.
And Bama's kickers are never good, by the way.
Nope.
So you're putting a shitty kicker out there, pardon my French, to try a 56-yard field goal on the hash.
Yeah.
Which makes it even further. So, I mean, you're thinking with Nick Saban, and don't forget this game, too, by the way. When Bama, yeah, I mean, they had the play prior to the kick. They had to review it to put 1 second back on the clock because he got went out of bounds and they actually wound the clock to zero. But upon further review,
that's right,
he stepped out with 1 second left. So if there's no review, there's no kick, and you go to overtime.
Absolutely,
but
right. And
out that they reviewed it, put a second back on, Bama tries to kick. You know, the rest is history.
And
but,
Blake, if it's 2 yards closer, the kick's still probably not good, but there's no chance of return.
No, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly, yep. Because he caught the ball at the very back of the end zone.
Very back of the end zone. And it's just a perfect storm of a lot of people thinking the play was over and also just some people having the wherewithal to block and to clear a path. Just fantastic. And like I said, any play that takes 100% chance away from one team and gives 100% chance to the other team, you know, I guess you could say 99.9, but it's sort of, you know, we've already mentioned the game last week, the Texans and Kansas City. I've never seen a swing like that in a game where one team's blowing the other one team out, then it switches.
Yep,
and then the other team blows the first team out. All of that happened in one play with a kick six.
Yep, that's
you know?
True.
And I don't know. To me,
it's a lot more likely that they actually blocked the kick and ran it in.
Right. Oh, a lot more. And that's not very likely.
No, they didn't do that. But a lot more likely for that to happen. Now, actually, you know, you're thinking, especially on a long field goal, you kick it low to get the distance, and that's a lot more likely. But he kicked it up and got too much height on it, I guess, you know?
Yep. Yep. Crazy. But it's also crazy, I guess, that Auburn team, even though they didn't win it all because they ran into Florida State that year, they were sort of the team of destiny up until that last game because they had those two wins in very improbable ways. Heck, your play of the decade, my play of the decade, back-to-back weeks. Crazy.
It was crazy. Good stuff.
Yeah, indeed, indeed.
So we got our player play and team, right?
Yep, that's it.
So let me ask you a question.
Sure.
What about game of the decade? As far as just, I'm not talking about like, I'm not saying the stakes had to be that high, but the most entertaining game of the decade for you. Mm-hmm. Like a game that you really thought, man, this is awesome. Like, and it was just entertaining, down to the wire. It doesn't have to be like necessarily a playoff game, but just an entertaining, great game.
It's tough. It's tough for me to not say Clemson-Bama in 2017.
It's tough for me
to not say that. It's also tough for me to not say Peach Bowl, Clemson-LSU back in 2012.
Yeah,
it's tough for me to not say those two games because I'm so closely attached to them. Give me a minute to think about it, and you can tell me yours in the meantime.
Well, mine, I'm leaving the SEC and ACC.
Oh, all right.
Going to the Big 12.
Okay.
Which is falling on hard times recently, but I think for a lot of this decade was the most exciting league in most exciting football played. I'm going 2014 TCU-Baylor.
Good game.
61-58, no overtimes, just – wide open offense, big comeback from Baylor there at the end. They end up having like 780 yards in that game, I think, or something like that. And TCU with Boykin and all those guys they had, and Patterson, and those two teams that year also kind of got screwed out of a playoff berth by Ohio State, which actually won the damn thing that year. But at the same time, I thought TCU and Baylor both were more deserving of a playoff berth that year. But neither one of them got it, of course, because they were TCU and Baylor. But I thought those two teams had an underrated rivalry. During that time span, they didn't like each other, and that game was just in that new Baylor Stadium the first year it opened. I still watch it to this day. I actually watch it sometimes, the whole thing. Just every now and then I'll watch it because it's just old school Big 12, just up and down the field, up tempo, my kind of stuff. So that's my favorite game of the decade.
That's a good one. That was a really fun one. What was that?
And I'm gonna do honorable mention is a homer, South Carolina, Missouri, 2013, when they had us down 17-0 in the fourth quarter. We came back to force overtime and beat them.
Was that Connor Shaw during that time?
Well, Shaw wasn't playing because he was hurt. They put him in the fourth quarter hurt, and he led us back.
I remember that game. Yep, I remember that game.
So that's another one, my homer honorable mention. But there's been a lot of good ones. I mean, you can get on the list, Greg, and if you start thinking about it, start thinking about the great games. Yeah, I mean, Clemson-LSU was a good one. That's another good one.
But I'm actually – this is a homer pick, but it's a real pick. I'm actually going to go Clemson-Bama. 2017 for the 2016 season, but in 2017, I'm going to go that as my game of the decade. It's too tough for me to divorce the personal feelings from that. But also, on my honorable mention, and I'm only going to mention this because I don't think it gets a lot of the praise it deserves. How about the national championship game a couple years ago, Bama Georgia?
Yeah, or Georgia Oklahoma,
but Bama Georgia specifically because.
Yeah.
That game doesn't get a lot of love either anymore.
No.
And I think
it's because it was two SEC schools.
It was two SEC schools, but it went into overtime, and that was also Tua's coming out party. And I can't imagine to have a walk-off touchdown throw, 30-yard, 35-yard, whatever it was, touchdown throw to win the national championship is pretty special, especially for a guy who was a true freshman at the time,
yeah,
too.
Just gotten sacked like a loss of like 12 yards.
Yeah, and I thought, man, this is over. And Bama – believe it or not, Blake, Bama missed a field goal to win it, too.
Yep.
Believe it or not.
I thought that this is Georgia's year. I'm going to say I enjoy the Georgia-Oklahoma game more, personally.
That game was great. The previous game was great.
That one more because it was a little bit more up and down, back and forth, and also, the whole Baker-Mayfield dynamic in that game, too. I really enjoyed that game because Baylor had a big – I think they were up 31-14 in the second quarter. And Georgia figured some things out. And then all of a sudden it was, it went to overtime. And I don't know what the final was, but it was – I actually liked that game too.
Heck, Blake, Bama-Oklahoma last year was great. Oklahoma's – they tend to have good games in the playoffs. They just never win. Was it Bama-Oklahoma last year where Jalen Hurts came back in?
Bama, Georgia, and that's in the SEC title game.
That's what I'm thinking of. Why did I say Oklahoma? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Too many teams.
No, they get blown out in playoff games, except for the one.
Except for that one.
Time against Georgia, they played well, but they typically in the playoffs don't do well. I guess their style of football doesn't translate. I guess is what you can say, but no, it's a good game too. I mean, and you can go. I mean, you can pick during the season these wild games that just are a lot of fun. For what it was in this bowl season, I really enjoyed the Virginia Tech Kentucky game.
That was great. That was a great game. Yeah.
So it's these games that you don't think about that all of a sudden you're like, yeah, that was a really good, really entertaining. It's always when they come down to the wire. That's what makes it the most fun. It was back and forth. It was ebb and flow to it. It comes down to the wire. And then you see, something happen like Bowden, who actually never throws to the perfect TD pass or.
Bowden.
Bowden. What?
Well, Blake, let me ask you this, and there may not be a good answer to this, but what was the best Clemson South Carolina game of the decade?
As odd as this may sound, 2015.
That was the closest one.
Yeah, well, I mean, don't you mean the most? I mean, the best game, or
well,
what
yeah, I mean, it's kind of a tricky decade because there really weren't many close games on either side. You know, like when y'all won, they were pretty decisive. When we won, they were pretty decisive for the most part.
Because I think in our run, our 5-year run, I think it was double figures every win.
Yep, it was.
And then in your run, with the exception of that game, it's been double figures or more, a lot more sometimes.
Yeah, it has like been.
53-ish, or 56-7 it was back in 2016. So, I mean, most of them are not close. That was the closest one. The most entertaining one was probably last year.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I was going to say. It was last year.
When Jake Bentley threw for 510 yards somehow.
Right, and that's one of those games where the score doesn't really indicate – what actually happened on the field. It made it look a whole lot more lopsided than it was. And you go back and look, you're like, man, Bentley did light us up.
It wasn't South Carolina had – I mean, we had to go for it a lot in situations where we would normally kick a field goal close because we knew we had to score touchdowns because we couldn't stop you. So, yeah, the score – the yardage was pretty close. The score was still a 3-touchdown game, I think. Was it 56-35?
That's what it was. Yeah, 56-35.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was entertaining. If you like this, if you like to see teams go up and down the field, but which I was pretty proud of doing that against the Brent Venables defense, frankly.
Yeah.
And I'm actually not happy to LSU because we had 600 yards against you guys. I like nobody's ever breaking that against Venables, and of course they get 628. I think we had 600 even in that game.
I think that's right. Yeah.
And they had 628, so I was a little bit disappointed that they went over 600, but because that was kind of our. Hey, we may suck, but we put 600 yards on Brent Venables in his house.
On a 15-0 team.
Exactly. I can say this, Greg. Yeah, they put 628 on you yard-wise, but it was in the Superdome. Wasn't in your house. So there you go.
Man, that's something to hang your hat on. Yeah.
Lost by 3 touchdowns. Because I think y'all had like 7-something. I don't know. I mean, it was just,
we had 720 or something like that. Well, Blake, it was a fun decade of football, and actually, we've been podcasting through most of it. I think this is our
start.
I think 2013 might have been our start. So I think we had 6 or 7 years. 2012, 2013 was our start. I don't know. I have to go back and look. But I'm looking forward.
And I mentioned, see how our pod. When you first start doing something like this, and we had no experience. It's more mechanical.
Yeah.
Maybe. And I hope now we're not. I mean, we're not exactly, freaking breaking the download records for podcasts. And I'm cool with that because we don't do it for any other reason than we enjoy talking about football. And it's fun to do that. But, it's been fun doing it for all these years. It really has. It's just something you get used to doing. And you, it's like you said one time, I think, we talk about football anyway. Why not do it and record it, And now we don't do it like we don't. Have our bullet points good and we go down a list and talk what we do on here, but we would get on the phone on Sunday and just kind of shoot the breeze about football for an hour. you know,
or more.
The whole thing, you know, or more. Yeah. And
yeah.
Then I think you had the idea, you know, because I mean, podcasting was starting to get big back then, and now it's huge. Now I listen to a lot more podcasting than radio, because podcasting is basically on demand radio. You know, you get what you want whenever you want it, and radio now is kind of becoming. It's kind of like, you know, TV with you know, the satellite companies competing with the streaming services. You know, like your Netflix and your Amazon Prime and your Disney and all that stuff. Kind of same with podcasting. It's kind of the new thing, and it's on demand. Listen when you want. And we got in, I guess, kind of not really early on that, but we got in kind of early, I guess. In 2012, 2013 was when it was kind of starting. Now you have all these podcasting, I'm going to say podcasting companies, or.
Yeah, some of them are. Yeah.
Platforms, I guess is a better way to put it. Are we just in iTunes?
No, we're all over.
Yeah, how does that work?
I don't know. you do what's called a feed burner, and when you upload to whatever your host is, it automatically disseminates to whatever platforms you have it set. Mm-hmm. So and what's tricky is it different platforms have different requirements a lot of times, especially when it comes to like image that you use and metadata and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I don't really fool with all that. I just kind of do it kind of a general way that'll work okay for all of them, rather than tailoring it to each specific one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we're on iTunes, we're on Google Podcasts, we're on, I believe, TuneIn Radio, I think Yahoo Podcasts, and maybe one or two other ones.
We don't Stitcher or anything like that, or do you know?
No, I don't even know what that is.
You know, what, Podbean? Are we on Podbean? You know what Podbean is?
I don't know. I don't know if we're on Podbean.
I'm going to have to look, because I actually use Podbean a good bit for my podcast.
Well, maybe that's what I'll have to do between now and when we start up again in the summer.
As you can tell, listeners, that this ain't my field.
We don't really know what we're doing.
Greg's the tech guy.
And I'm not really that good at it, so it's just...
Well, I disagree on that one, but yeah,
well, thank you, Blake.
It's fun. You do a good job, and it's just fun for us to do this. And if people listen, great. And really, if they don't, they don't. I mean, I'm not really, you know. So I mean, we're not out here peddling, you know, products or
my next meal does not depend on it. That's for sure.
Yeah, we're not. You know, this isn't about. This is about just love of football. And if you love football and like to listen to. To rednecks talk about it, then I guess we're the guys, we're here for you, you know.
Indeed. Well, Blake, I'm looking forward to another decade of talking football and whatever that may bring. Listeners,
yeah, I'm hoping the next decade, as far as my team goes, is better than the last few years of this one, and I'm sure you hope your team continues the success you've had.
Momentum, upholding that momentum would be nice.
Yeah.
Listeners,
yeah.
We hope you guys enjoyed the football season, whoever it is you happen to cheer for. We know Bill enjoyed it, that's for sure. In fact, Bill is probably still nursing a hangover, if I had to guess. Or he may be still celebrating. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, he may still be in NOLA.
He may be. But listeners, we hope you guys...
And we're going by the Connecticut.
Yeah, we hope you guys enjoyed the season, enjoyed the episode. We may drop... Who knows, Blake, depending on what happens. Maybe a... combine episode or something. Who knows? If we get a wild hair between now and
bitch, combine wise, what guys do you have leaving? Do you know yet?
We know Higgins is gone. Probably ETN. We don't know. I would say he's gone.
Simmons, I guess too.
Yes, definitely Simmons.
What about the other guy I was thinking of? What about the cornerback, number 8? Is he back or is he leaving?
He's leaving, although I read a lot that said his draft stock really got hurt because he got abused in that national championship game. Joe Burrow.
He did, but I'm going to say this, okay, and I thought about that. But, man, good Lord, you're not giving him safety help. He's having to cover these guys, Jordan Chase and –
He also missed a tackle or two, to the point where my buddy that I was watching the game with, he was actually like, man, I'll bet Odell Beckham Jr. paid him money to blow some tackle. You know, you know who I'm talking about, and you can imagine that's the kind of thing he would say. I don't think that's true, but he did. That was not his best game, and a lot
Odell
of people,
Beckham Jr. did hand Justin Jefferson a wad full of money.
Hilarious that LSU, first of all, said it was fake, and then they had to come back and say, no, it's actually real money. They had to admit it.
I guess we could surmise that Justin Jefferson will not be back to LSU.
Yeah, correct.
And if he thought about it, he might come back, he can't anymore. He's a professional athlete. Now,
right. I mean, yep. Indeed.
Take that money on camera. Now you can take it behind the scenes, and if nobody knows about it, they don't know about it. But when you take it on camera, you're professional. So I think he was leaving. I'm pretty sure he was leaving anyway. So
yeah. And it'll be interesting to see what comes of that too. That'll be.
But Beckham's such a damn diva. I mean, it's not all about you. I think he's just such a damn attention-seeking prick.
Which, by the way. Anybody who wears an $800,000 watch while they play their particular sport is a douchebag, except with one exception, and that exception is Rafael Nadal, which is actually the same watch. And do you know why he's the exception?
Because he probably gets paid a lot of money to wear it, I would guess.
Yes, the watch company pays him to wear it. And so, yeah, he wears $1 million watch when he plays, but that's because he's getting paid to do it. Odell Beckham Jr. just does it because he's an idiot. But anyway, that's a whole different conversation for a whole other day.
I read that Nadal had a hair transplant.
I read that too. I read that he's actually had a few and they haven't taken.
They haven't taken?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, because he's got it bad.
Shave it off, man. Shave it off.
Yeah. Yeah, you hate to see it. Especially when old man Federer still looks like freaking Robert Redford with his hair, you know? Floating in the breeze, looks like a freaking Gundy.
How old is Nadal now? Is he probably what, like early 30s?
No, he's 33, 34, I think.
Jeez, man, he's young compared to Federer. How old is Federer, like 38?
Federer's 38.
Your age?
Yeah, Federer's 38.
Jeez, man, that's incredible. It's amazing how, you know, used to be in sports, and tennis is one of these sports too, that when you hit 30, you're done. Shit, not anymore, man.
Well, especially in tennis, because you could be successful at like 16.
Yeah, it's true. And you get burnt out and all that stuff. Sampras retired at what, 30?
Yeah. Well, early 30s, yeah.
Yeah.
Agassi was like 34, 35.
Yeah, that's rare, though. I mean, usually it was guys like, McEnroe was like 30, and
Jimmy Connors had a little run when he was what, 40, but that doesn't really count.
Yeah, well, that's really rare. Stefan Edberg, I think he was like late 20s.
By the way, have you seen him? He still looks like he's 33.
Really?
Yeah, he looks great.
Those damn Swedish jeans, man.
Yeah, yeah. Versus Boris Becker looks like a bloated tick.
That poor guy, man. It looks like he's been drunk for 10 years.
Yeah, he looks probably like looks like a German cab driver, you know.
Hey, can we still recording?
Yeah.
Well, interesting conversation. People who just tuned in for football and we started getting on. I didn't know we were still recording or not.
Yeah, so. Well, heck, on that note, we'll probably go ahead.
Yeah, we'll stop it.
Gone off the rails at this point.
You're big time.
All right, listeners, we appreciate you guys listening. Drop us a line. If we don't hear from you, though, keep an eye out. We'll be back around, August or so when the football season starts ramping up again. It was a good season, Blake, and I had a lot of fun doing this podcast, watching football. Had a lot of fun.
It's just sad to see it's over, but, you know.
Such is life.
We have nothing to take our time up until then. It's like there's nothing to fall back on, so we'll just have to be depressed until August.
Fair enough. All right, listeners, enjoy your off season more than Blake apparently will, and I will as well. We'll see you guys late summer. Blake, it was fun, brother.
As always.